All right, JC. I was excited to do this podcast with you. This is fun. And I loved this. Give us a little recap. This past Sunday, we're still going through Story of God. We were Mark 14. Kind of a weird dinner party. Takes a weird turn. Tell us about the story. Kind of 30 seconds. You kind of going into this week, this story, kind of how it hit you.
Yeah, that's really the privilege of being able to preach, is being able to dig into things. Yeah. When I first received this assignment of like preaching on this passage, I was like, okay, like I've always read it and it's been a little weird to me. Like I felt like the disciples, like, boy, this feels inefficient.
Yeah.
This feels like, yeah, why couldn't you have just used a few drops and sold it so you could, you know, help the poor? And so that pragmatic, practical side of me has always read that story as like, yeah, this is kind of weird. And she did what? She broke the jar and then poured it all on his head. Didn't realize until I studied it, like how much.
Yeah.
Which just made it even weirder.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she let down her hair and she's with drying his feet. And it wasn't until I really dug into this story and saw the context and where Mark kind of captures it in the context of this darkness and contrasted this beauty with that darkness and just how, exaggerated would be the word I use, exaggerated.
Yeah. Felt like a lot.
Poured out, extravagant, I guess is the better word, extravagant love for Jesus.
We do this Tuesday mornings and Monday night, we have a small group. So we read the story and I kind of just asked them, it's the kind of newlyweds, it's like 20s and stuff. And I was like, what do you guys, put yourself in that room. Like, how are you responding? Mm-hmm. And someone was like, when I get uncomfortable, I laugh. And so someone's like, I feel like I would just laugh. A couple people talk about when you get secondhand embarrassment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you're embarrassed for somebody, you're like, oh gosh, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure there probably was a little bit of that. Like, oh, she really doing this?
Yeah. So in case you weren't here Sunday, you know, the story basically before Jesus would go to the cross, kind of coming up on Holy Week, this dinner party. Mm-hmm. And then out of the middle of it, this lady breaks open this jar of perfume, pours it over Jesus, washes his feet with her hair. And then the disciples, specifically Judas, but the disciples are like mad that she... Why are we wasting this? We could have taken this and used this to feed the poor. We could have been efficient with this. This was a waste of this. And Jesus is like, hold on. And he says, leave her alone. She did a beautiful thing to me. Yeah. And that beautiful thing was such
a... She gave what she could and did this beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you say it's a waste.
Right.
I say this is beautiful.
One of the things that you talked about Sunday, and I think this is important. Now, this conversation, I'm like, man, I'm excited to have it for you. It could scratch heads because we talk about beauty, and there might be some guys listening that we talk about beauty, and you're like, oh my gosh, when we talk about flowers and sunsets. But I think when we talk about that word beauty, is there other language that you might put to it? Like, I was thinking about this morning of the things that are breathtaking or maybe deeply meaningful, things that kind of capture our hearts on a deep level. Are the things that you think of that you might round out that word, she did a beautiful thing? And so when we talk about beauty, other words that might come to mind to fill that picture out?
Well, that's a really good question because, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, the outdoor stuff
of
mountains and reflections in a lake or things like that. But I also think when my kids got older, and I'd go to a band concert or a soccer game, and they would do something that almost like that swelling of pride.
Yeah. the good kind of pride.
Yeah, the good kind of pride. that swelling of pride, like, oh man, that's my son.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of look at that as beauty.
Like a joy,
too. There's so much, joy. Things that make us joyful, things that make us maybe reflect, stop, maybe stop. Pause in life and like our minds race, but something beautiful can make us like, oh, almost catch our breath and pause and think about things that are greater, things that are beyond us.
Almost like we're kind of humming through life in those beautiful interruptions, whether it be we were talking about this in the group last night and someone said they were on vacation and saw baby turtles like going to the sea. And she's like, it was beautiful, you know, and that those things that almost make you stop and from the hum of life and be like, oh yes, mm-hmm. I am an alive human mm-hmm. living in this, even though everything's broken, even though we're tainted by sin, those almost cracks where the light shines in and you see the, cause I think about this, you know, neither of us would claim to be artists. Would you claim to be an artist?
No.
Neither would I. But Jonathan does beautiful furniture restoration. Likes to go turn trash into treasure. And I, in my own stupid ways, try to do it too. But there's something about that, like, longing for beauty and things. I think of a song. And I think of maybe specifically guys who are listening. Like, I have friends with a lot of guys who hunt. Well, I've been hunting one time, and it was rabbit hunting, and I was scaring the rabbits out. That was my job. But you talk to any guy who hunts, and you're like, put me up in a tree stand. It's quiet. Mm-hmm. It's 6 a.m. Sun's mm-hmm. just peeking up. They'd be like, yeah, dude, that's beautiful. You know, like yeah. that kind of
yeah.
LeBron dunking over three dudes. That's beautiful.
Well, and I think we often, when we associate beauty, it's often visual or auditory.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas a lot, I think Scripture, when it talks about beauty, talks more about like the heart,
yeah, yeah,
and like living lives that are beautiful. In other words, lives with integrity,
yeah,
with honesty.
Love
with,
that.
With you know, just living, walking with God mm-hmm. is beautiful in yeah. in and of itself.
What would you say to Weisberg pragmatism, which, you know, practical, if it's functional, if it's what word did someone use? Like logistical, maybe is like a scientific-y word for it, but pragmatic. Everything makes sense, adds up. 1 + 2 = 3. We're moving along, you know, all those things. Neither of us are saying any of those things are bad. Those things mm-hmm. are good.
Exactly.
I do yep. not want to waste time.
Right.
You know, yep. like we've both been places probably where you show up and someone wasn't prepared or put together, and so it's late, and it, you're like, what are we doing? You know, we got to get our ducks in a row here.
You just feel the anxiety.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So neither of us are saying pragmatism and being efficient in those things isn't important. But sometimes in the church, sorry, I'm adjusting my mic. Sometimes in the church, and just as humans in general, the efficiency, the practicality, the 1 + 1 = 2, how would you say, because the way you said it is God values the inefficient, mm-hmm. which I think, I remember us having a conversation like 10 years ago. I had a friend quote that, and I said it, I had it in a sermon, and you're reading through my notes, like, what do you mean by that? And I remember us dialoguing about mm-hmm. it, I think I said it. How do you think sometimes our pragmatism gets in the way of our following Jesus? Hmm. Our everything needing to add up, everything needing to make sense. How can that get in the way of our actual life with Christ sometimes?
I think it was one of the application points is like our broken jar. Maybe we need to break the jar of productivity and spend a moment with Jesus or in the Word or in prayer yeah. or taking a walk that seems inefficient.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we can get so caught up in doing
yeah.
and finishing the task that we're not abiding.
Yeah.
We're not abiding. We're not remaining in the vine, John 15.
Hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, that's when I start to do things in my own strength.
Yeah.
And what I found is, yeah, I can do things in my own strength, but I don't do it as well. I'm not as efficient as I think that I am.
Yeah.
But when I'm yeah. spending a moment of maybe what feels unproductive or inefficient, that time resets my heart, resets my mind, resets my day in a way that it changes everything. Jesus says, without me, you can do nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't think we always believe that. Like, yeah. oh, no, I'm efficient. I can yeah. do things.
Right.
But there's something of doing things in the Spirit and with Jesus that is powerful and I believe creates even more beauty.
Yeah. You said this Sunday that, you know, God values inefficiency, which that may hit you weird, but you really think about the story of God and you're like, well, he included humans in this whole thing and we're not the most mm-hmm. efficient mm-hmm. things on the in the world. But he included people. There's these long periods. He used one couple, Abraham and Sarah, to begin this family. And this family went every which way and wandered and enslaved and eventually exiled. And then eventually, at just the right time, Galatians says, Jesus came. And then for 30 years, he was in the backwoods of Israel before he showed up on the scene. Mm-hmm. And then half the time, people didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And then he died, and then he's like, and now it's going to be the kingdom, the kind of the, it's going to be the church until I come back. And you're like, you know, Lord, I think if we got a couple, you know, production line experts in here, we can move this thing along. Mm-hmm. Like, God inherently, the story isn't a fast story. You know, discipleship is a lifelong process. The gospel is a seed. I just planted seed in my yard, and I'm like, it's going to be a while till it comes. I got to water it. I got to stand out there. I wanted rain, but we got snow. The story is not efficient in the way that we think about it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I love the way that you said God could preach better than we could. He could lead worship better, make better coffee. Like,
yeah, I think he would be the ultimate greeter because he would remember everyone's names and, you know, their history and who's connected to who.
Yeah, we complicate everything, mm-hmm. you know? And so there is in the midst of that, the beauty of all, you talked about Genesis 2 and like him making things beautiful. You kind of said this before we got on that he didn't have to do those things.
Right.
You know, he didn't have to make the trees pleasing to the eye and mm-hmm. food taste the way it does. And, mm-hmm. and there's something to all that. What do you think, you know, sometimes I think there's a, I don't know who, this is probably some old dude who has a statue in Rome or something, but they talked about how humans long for the good, the beautiful, and the true. And how maybe in our cultural moment, I think of this story, this woman's sacrifice and doing a beautiful thing for Jesus, that we often say, hey, is the Bible, is this story true? That's the first door we walk through. Is all this stuff real? Is it true? And that maybe has fallen on questionable times where what about this? What about this? You know, there's questions. Is it good? You know, there's questions maybe 30, 40 years ago. We assume that, the church, the moral people, but that flips a lot in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Are those people inside that church, are they good? You know, you hear scandals, you work with grumpy Christians, have a weird uncle, and you're like, are Christians good? How do you think that beauty becomes a door into the opportunity for the gospel to land in people's hearts and maybe be a door into evangelism? How do you think beauty kind of maybe plays a role in that?
Yeah, I'm thinking back on what you had said previously before the question and the idea that, you know, we can make life all about doing, and God values the inefficiency. It can sometimes value inefficiency.
Yeah.
That just screams at me grace. It screams the gospel you know, stop doing. It's already been done for you. Now, you know, obviously you said at the top that, yeah, that doesn't mean we do nothing.
Right. Right.
But I think we get so caught up in doing. It's kind of a catchphrase, but like, we get caught up so much in doing, we forget to be. And like, we've been made in the image of God.
Yeah.
Our identity is not in what we do.
Yeah.
It's in who God has made us to be, how he's created us. And I think when we're able to live out of that identity of simply being who God created me to be, that in itself is a beauty that is different than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
That's trying to elevate themselves by all the things that they do and the accomplishments, which again, you know, we do want to pursue things and do things and do things with excellence. Yeah. But there's that whole idea of, I think God knew that we would get caught up in that trap. That's why on the seventh day he rested.
Yeah.
He gave us an example of just take a step back.
Yeah.
And to me, that's part of, as we mentioned before, that's part of beauty.
Yeah.
is taking a step back. I know there was a speaker that I heard that was talking about, you know, should we plant roses when the world is burning? And he talked about...
Which I love the way you started with that. I just saw people like, especially right now, you turn the news, you're like, so what are we doing? Yeah.
The world is literally burning in different places. And, you know, it's hard to be like, I need to do something practical. These artists, by continuing to do the creative work that they were doing, created actually hope.
Yeah.
And that hope would drive people. I read later on, there's a guy who wrote a book about gardens in World War II. Hmm. So kind of a niche book.
You got to pass that along.
But he was talking about how prisoners in concentration camps would plant gardens knowing that they would never get to harvest it.
Huh. Oof.
But it was just in that case, the beauty of the work and the beauty of seeing the grass seed germinate and come up and seeing new life that gave them hope and the resilience to keep living.
Yeah. There's a, this might be a cheesy Pinterest quote. It might be a sage of humanity, but someone like a garden is like putting faith in the future. It's some kind of
something like
some
that,
kind of thing like that. I love, the passage is escaping me, but I love how you said there's the beauty of the sunsets and the baby turtles and the song and the art and the babies being born, all those things. But I love how you said a life of integrity, a life of gentleness, a life that bears the fruit of the Spirit. The passage is escaping me to where I think it's in, I think it's Peter. Mm-hmm. Talks about living a beautiful life among the pagans.
Yeah.
About people that don't see Jesus. What's the passage? It's escaping me. But live such good lives among the pagans that even though they might look and be like, I don't like Jesus is the only way, or your views on sexuality, your views on morality, that feels like a bunch of old school stuff. But man, you know, is there something compelling about our lives? But man, the way that you love people, the way that your heart is still, you know, there's an invitation there of the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount and the fruit of the Spirit that creates this beautiful life that Jesus invites us into that is compelling.
Yeah. I think joy is a big one. Like you go into the workplace and everybody's like, you know, but you come in with joy is like, what's their problem?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so different that it becomes light in the darkness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, how can you be so joyful when everything stinks?
Yeah.
Everything's messed up. And yet you still have joy.
It's very easy to become cynical. Mm-hmm. It could be one of the kind of mentioned this Sunday, but it can be easy for me for that to be something to battle. You know, when you let those things, you know, kind of going along with the World War II thing you said, I have to check my... I have to Google this, but I remember hearing years ago when we would hear in the news all the time of ISIS taking over places, that one of the first things they would do is kind of get rid of the art, get rid of the, you know, Disney characters or film or whatever, because you want to get rid of those cultural artifacts that offer hope, that offer light, that offer creativity and these gifts of the Lord, because if we can shut those things down, it's just interesting how you, even looking at history, there's something to beauty being squelched, yet the gospel is like a flower that pops out in the midst of of all that.
Well, one of the first things they did when like the USSR at that time, the Soviet Union, I remember reading this, I don't remember all the details, but they talked about what role that art would have in their communist regime. And so they got rid of certain kinds of art because they wanted to keep people at a certain place.
Yeah.
And by getting rid of that, it didn't remind them of those freedoms.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fascinating.
I love that. And again, like, we're not trying to be too artsy guys. Right. Be like, what do you think about Monet? You know, but all of us, like, man, when we're working out, for every dude working out, you put on some. I remember one time, a Bittersweet Symphony, bum, 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 came on, and Dan was like, what's this song? You know, like, there's things that stir us to something greater. And what would you say for those times that maybe, what are the things that kind of keep your, like, this lady in this story, she just, she was wasteful for the sake of Christ. Could have used that for a lot of other things. She embarrassed herself, but she gave not just what we looked at that a couple weeks ago. The lady gave what she had, the two pennies, but this lady had a family heirloom that cost, you said, 20 to 50 grand is what this would have cost. And she's like, for Jesus, because he was worth it. What are the things in your own life that maybe stir a sense of beauty, that stir a sense of worship for you that maybe we wouldn't always think of as worship? Did not prep him for that question either.
No.
Because it's very easy for us to segment, like, here's my money I give, that's worship. Here's the songs, if I like them, this is my worship, my hour on Sunday. And those things are all good, core, important practices to form us to be like Christ as a community. But just in our lives, what are the things that for you have been like, these are simple, beautiful things that always kind of stir my attention back to Christ?
Yeah, I think of Eric Little, who's the missionary, Chariots of Fire. He talks about when I run, I feel God's pleasure. And there's things like that, like hobbies, like you mentioned, you know, taking an old piece of furniture and stripping it and sanding it and restaining it, and is like, oh wow. And sometimes I think about, like, wow, this is really what God does for me.
Yeah. It could be just this is a functional thing. I'm just redoing a piece of, or the same thing with attention on Christ becomes an act of worship.
Yeah. Just thank you. I'm learning to be, I'm learning to practice gratitude and just taking a second to say, you know, even the sunset or things like that, taking a second to say, thank you. And I think I may have mentioned this before. I'll never forget, I was with a missionary and a group of guys, and we went on a hike, and there's a waterfall. We're like, oh, cool waterfall. You know, I wonder if we can jump off of it and stuff. And this missionary just said, hey, let's pause, let's circle up, let's just thank God that he created this. And I was like, it's like, oh, you know, at that point in my life, it's like, I would have never thought to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to pause and to recognize God's hand, I think Ezra uses this term again and again, is that, and the gracious hand of God was upon us. And it says it multiple times.
Yeah.
And I like to think about that as, like, God's gracious hand was upon us in this situation when we saw this happen.
Yeah.
Or when we experienced this, or he did something in my life that maybe changed how I think about something, or, you know, that transformation is like, man, God's gracious hand is on me. I think taking the moments to step out of the busyness to recognize God's gracious hand.
I love that. And I love the, there's something, as followers of Jesus, we're living in the same world as everybody else, the same brokenness, the same news, the same pain of the world, like all those same things, like we aren't immune to or don't see the same simple pleasures, you know, we all eat PB&Js. I eat a lot of peanut butter and jelly right now, dude. This is my snack. But we all live in the same world, and there's something about the reframing it in light of the gospel, in light of the character of God, in light of the presence of God and the work of the Spirit that just turns all those things.
Well, even this popped in my mind, like, just even watching March Madness, you know, watching these young,
he was trying to say, Aiden doesn't watch March Madness. Like, you may not understand.
You probably, I don't know that you watched any games, but just the ability to do some of those things, and even there's beauty in competition, and how you respond to losing, how you respond to winning, you know, a beautiful, you know, a beautiful feed with a dunk is like, wow, God gave us the ability to do that,
yeah.
to be able to just recognize again God's hand in something like, you know, we could go throughout the day, go throughout our lives and never recognize that as something from God.
Yeah.
But to just, to put our lives or have the posture of always trying to think that way,
yeah.
of being grateful, thankful, and seeing God's gracious hand.
Yeah. The simple act of paying attention. There, think of those different ways that there's almost a sense of where beauty can surprise us. You know what I mean? Catches you off guard.
Yeah.
In certain ways, I think of movies we might watch. Have you ever seen The Tree of Life?
I haven't. No.
Dan was angry that I recommended it. It's such a slow. It doesn't have a story, but the movie opens with a passage from Job that was like, "Where were you when I created the foundations of the world?" And the movie is like, it just captures like the most small, insignificant aspects of life. But then there's like a 20-minute creation scene in the middle from like dinosaurs and stuff. Like from, it's weird. But we finished and like, I didn't know if it was the worst movie I ever saw or the most beautiful movie. Sarah had a tear in her eyes. Like that might've been the most, it just hit us, but it hit us at the right. If I watched it today, I'd be like, this is so slow, but it just hit us. Mm-hmm. And there was like this kind of perspective of God that opened. Sometimes music does that, you know, where it just hits you and there's something deep and profound that we could say, oh, it's just an emotional reaction to your chemicals. You're like, okay, all right. If that's how you want to live in this world, you know what I mean? But it becomes an act of worship, an act of gratitude. There's a book I picked up at the thrift store. I think it's Ann Dillard. Have you heard that name? It's a pretty boring book. I read like 3 pages a week. I'm like, I'll finish it before the year's over. But she's kind of just like observes nature. And she talked about this one chapter, the blazing of the sun coming up and the magnitude of the sun. But she talked about the way that she saw the sun was it reflected off of fish's scales. Mm. And just like the magnitude of something coming to us through something as small and insignificant as a reflection off of a fish. Like all of that becomes worship.
Yeah, you know? Tim Chester in his book, Enjoying God, has a whole chapter on there of like recognizing God in creation.
Yeah.
And he lists a bunch of things that I'm like, oh, wow, that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, I think he mentioned icicles.
Icicles are cool.
And icicles are cool.
Show me a person who doesn't stop and think, well, that's a cool icicle. And I'll show you someone who doesn't enjoy life.
He talks about anthills and a grass blade and, you know, things that we take for granted every day. But taking the time to pause to recognize and be like, there's a creator behind this.
Yeah, yeah. And when we worship pragmatism, we miss all of that. If we that lady in the story, like if she was just as pragmatic and just as like, well, let's make sure everything adds up. Let's not do anything, wasting our time or energy or effort. Let's not, this beautiful thing wouldn't have happened. And Jesus says, what she did for me, wherever the gospel is preached, she'll be. And so here we are Sunday, a couple thousand years ago in the gospel of Mark. And you're like, here's this woman's, what did it accomplish? Nothing. At the time, except for worship of Christ, you know, like worship of Jesus is the end, you know, so that, well, what is seeing a sun reflect off of a fish or what is a song or what does it accomplish? You're like worship of Christ. And downstream from that, the hope is a door for, to give an account for the hope that we have, that we don't just follow this all because it seems like a good program, but we follow it because God is worthy of it. Because he's beautiful, because the story of the gospel is captures not just our minds, but our hearts. And yeah, think of all that, man. I love this message. I could sit here and just keep talking all day about it. It's good to be with you.
Yeah.